sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome back. Tonight, it's an NCAA tournament game in my mind. This is not just the Patriot League Championship. This is an NCAA tournament game tonight. For those of you who don't get a chance to go to the NCAA tournament, who watch it on TV, now you're here, you got one in your own backyard. The Patriot League Championship is on the line tonight. The Patriot League Championship brings with it an automatic bid. It puts you in the field of 68. It allows you to be one of the 31 champions in the tournament to go with 37 at-large bids. It is an NCAA bid. To me, it's an NCAA tournament game. It should be a really good one between two quality teams, Bucknell Lafayette. On Monday, Kevin and I had a chance to have Dave Paulson on the show, who's joined us all season long and has done an absolutely outstanding job with his team this season. And we labeled Dave, by the way, in this segment as the voice of reason.
Well, thanks, Steve. And it's not hard to be the voice of reason on your show. I mean,
you said it.
Anyone who appears is going to be the voice of reason. I figured that much out.
Listen, I'm telling you, be careful, Dave, because the fun sucker's here, and he's going to suck all the fun out of everything for you. So just want you to be careful.
All right. I appreciate that, Kevin.
Just because I'm realistic and won't speculate on seeding, Dave, I think I'm the one that's right because I know how big Wednesday is as opposed
Absolutely.
To somebody else.
Absolutely. That's a good thing I just got on the call because I'd have to – I become across the desk at Kevin, where, you know, I'm not.
That's
everyone in my office and everyone in my family is not allowed to look at Joe Lenardi or anything like that.
Good.
The only Joe they're looking at is Sloppy Joe's for dinner. That's it.
Very much. Saturday is a good reason why we're a step at a time in this thing and survive in advance is important. Is that a way to look at it? I thought Saturday was a perfect example of survive in advance.
Well, it is. I mean, and I was really worried about Army coming in because they were playing exceptionally well. When we beat Army on the road, you know, I walked out of that green. I'm like, that was a great win. I don't want to see those guys again. They're really, really, really hard to guard. You get this far in your conference tournament, you know, every team's a quality team, and they're playing with a lot of confidence. And that's certainly going to be the case with Lafayette, which has won, I don't even know how many in a row. They've won 7 or 8 or 9 games in a row, playing at a real high level. And, you know, we're going to have to play really well.
No question about that. Now, your defense has been your staple from day one. Army was able to get 70 in the game on you, but then again, Army's a very offensive-minded team. Still, when there was that once. What did your team in that spurt show you that was championship metal at that moment?
Well, you're right. I mean, Army's really hard to guard, and they are a high possession team. So it was our field goal numbers, we held them under 40% from the floor and under 30% from the 3-point line. So in many of the barometers of good defense, we played it. Now, we put them on the foul line too much, and that really hurt us. But when it really came down to gut check time and they took the lead, we responded with some winning plays, some tough hoops, 3 or 4 defensive stops in a row, made free throws. And the other thing is we were pressed for 40 minutes. We turned the ball over 3 times. So, you know, if you do those types of things, you're going to have a chance. So I thought the vast majority of the game, I thought we played very well against a high-quality opponent. We were good at challenge. And we're gonna need to do more of the same for 40 minutes on Wednesday night.
Yeah, no question about that. And again, you're able. What was 12-1 run or something like that? That was we finally got a little bit of breathing room.
Yeah, we did. I mean, they came down. They hit a three. They hit a basket to go up one, and then Bryson Johnson to go up two, I think. And then Bryson Johnson hit a three. We got a stop. We got a transition basket by Cameron Ayers, and then we got another stop. We got the ball inside to Mike, and he got fouled. He made 2 free throws, and you know we just you know that gave us a little separation there down the stretch.
You mentioned Mike, that being of course Mike Muscala. If I were to mention Tom Gola, Oscar Robertson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Lou Alcindor back then, Larry Bird, Ralph Sampson, Bill Bradley, Rick Barry, Patrick Ewing, Wayman Tisdale, Mike Muscala. What do they all have in common? They're all 2,000-point, 1,000-rebound guys. And this is an exclusive group of people. When you hear that and the list that Mike's on, I know you appreciate it because you're there every day with the guy. But how much do the fans appreciate what they actually have been watching for 4 years?
Well, I think the fans appreciate it. You know, I think they do. I think you spoiled them. I think you spoiled us. And, you know, it's when it's taken away from us that we'll really, really appreciate them. You know, because I think when you see excellence day in, day out, it's hard to fathom. And that's the thing. I mean, Mike's had some big monster games, but his career high is 33 points. You know, he hasn't scored 30 points in a game this year. So he's not a guy who's getting 50 one night. He's a guy who's getting 22 points and 15 rebounds and 4 block shots on a nightly basis. Day in, day out, getting double teamed, triple teamed, held, grabbed. I mean, if you could see clips of what teams do to him where it's not called, it is outrageous, and he has had remarkable poise in the midst of all this holding and grabbing and shoving that goes uncalled by the officials.
And that's the tough part. They need to clean up post play in this game, don't they, Dave?
Well, you know, they do, and you know, every year we get a directive from the head of officiating and a video, and point of emphasis is to clean up low post play. And we go to extreme in that regard because I don't want there to be any chance for Mike to get called for stupid physical fouls that's going to put him on the bench. You know, many of our rivals who don't have that skill to guide, they'll say, well, we'll just foul him every time and dare the officials to call it, and they're not going to do it. And it's the same thing with, you know, that we were pressed and hand checked for 40 minutes. They call two or three, and then you know, they look at the scoreboard, and it's a 7-1 differential, and the other coach complains, and then they stop calling it. So it's hard. It's certainly a hard sport to officiate, but when you have, you know, as I told the head of officials, in the NBA, if you got the best player, he gets star treatment. He gets sent to the line when there's probably not even a touch. I feel like we're being penalized often by having the best player in the league.
Lafayette's a team that has three players that are averaging double figures, Dave, and another one that's averaging 9.5 a game. How difficult is the balance for Lafayette that they bring to the table for any team to defend?
Well, they're really, you know, they put four guards on the floor. They shoot the three exceptionally well. They make about 8 threes in a game, and they're about 16th in the country in percentage of points they get from the three. So they put those guys out there, and they have a dynamic electric point guard in Tony Johnson. So he's far and away the best point guard in the conference, and he's been averaging over the last 8 or 9 games like 22 points a game and 7 or 8 assists a game. He's shooting about 70%, and then he's got those three-point shooters to kick it to, including their 4-men and their 5-men. So they're very unconventional in how you have to guard them. And if they get in a rhythm, you know, they're really tough to beat. Now, at home, when we played them at home, we held them 1-for-16 from the three. On the road, you know, they got some open looks, but obviously they make some more. You know, so hopefully we're a little bit better defensively than we were a month ago in Easton, and hopefully they're a little bit worse than what they were
that
night.
Yeah, literally 40% of their shot attempts are three-point shots. They are a volume three-point shooting team. So when you face a volume three-point shooting team that loves the arc, does that change subtly what you do with a team that loves the arc?
Well, you know what? We've really changed, you know, throughout the Patriot League season. It's really funny. We've had to play two different styles. In our non-league competition, we're playing the high major teams that were much more athletic than us and maybe weren't as skilled. You know, we would pack people in the paint, and we would really at all costs try to stop dribble penetration, and we might surrender some threes to keep people in front of us. And then once we got the league play, where virtually the entire league is four guards, we played really locked in tight on three-point shooters. And our three-point field goal defense has really, really improved. And that's what we have to do. But it means a guy like Joe Willman is chasing the guard around.
Yeah. Finally for you, Dave, and then I'll let you go because I know it's a big week for you. It is also a week where it is spring break at Bucknell. So how have you handled when you practice and how long you want to practice and how much tape time you have because of the time you have with them?
You know what? We haven't changed anything. You know, at this point in the year, I always believe less is more. You know, the one night, you know, we practice. This time of year, we're practicing an hour and 15 minutes, and we're getting free throws up. And we have our same ritual of how much tape we watch before every game. We're not going to deviate from that. You know, at this point, the nice thing is we can practice at 1 in the afternoon, and the guys can leave the gym, and it's daylight, and it's sunny out, and it's warm. And so I think that alone is good. You know, it does give us a chance for certain guys maybe to get in there and just get some shots up, and they don't have to worry about their classes or exams or writing a paper.
Yeah, and I think the primary part of the question was not the time you spend. It was more that you could practice them at 1 in the afternoon. In other words, you don't have to practice them after classes or things like that.
Right.
Because you have to get on at this time of the year. You need your legs, and they know what's going on.
Yeah, well, there's no question about it. They know what's going on, and we need your legs. And you know, there's an old adage: Are you ready or are you fresh? And I'd rather be fresh than ready. You know, in that regard, like 10 more minutes guarding Lafayette stuff, or making sure Mike Muscala's legs feel good and he can knock down a jump shot. I'm gonna rest Mike Muscala.
You got that right. 7:30 Wednesday night. Right to go. Play turn. Dave, best of luck. Absolute pleasure as always having you on the show.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
That's Dave Paulson. That's tonight. Soika, it to me is an NCAA tournament game. It's a Patriot League championship game, but it's an NCAA tournament game. That's how I view it. And the reason I view it that way is, look, it's a playoff game. NCAA tournament games are playoff games. They're one-and-done games. They're survive-and-advance games. Well, tonight you survive and you advance to the NCAA tournament. Now, Kevin, of course, was having fun with me saying, oh, I suck all the life out of it, because he was looking at the Joe Lunardi brackets and the speculation about where teams would be seated. And Bucknell can't feel that way. Now, let me give you a different example. I'm doing the game tomorrow at the United Center in Chicago with Penn State and Michigan. Okay? Everybody knows, regardless of the result tomorrow, Michigan's in. Everybody knows it. All right? They're right now, they're sixth in the BPI. I think they're ninth or tenth in the RPI. Sagarin, I think they're sixth. They're in. If they beat Penn State tomorrow, it just means they're going to the quarterfinals against Wisconsin. If Penn State wins tomorrow, Michigan's not out of the tournament. They're just out of the Big Ten tournament, and they're now going to start thinking about where their seating is for the NCAAs. Michigan wins the tournament, they probably can be a two seed. Michigan loses tomorrow to Penn State, they're still going to be probably a three. All right? Bucknell needs to win tonight to be in. They can't think about, oh, well, if it doesn't go well, where are we still going to be seated? Even though Bucknell is worthy of that, their resume is outstanding, especially their non-conference resume. But there is a reality. The reality is that the Patriot League championship game, it is a one-bid league. And I talked with Patrick Chambers about that last night on the Penn State basketball show on the Penn State Sports Network, because as an assistant at Villanova, he was in a multi-bid league. Thus, the tournament at Madison Square Garden, exciting, dynamic, the intensity that prepares you for the NCAAs, that one-and-done feeling that prepares you for the NCAAs, but Villanova knew they were going, including the year they went to the Final Four. They knew they were going. So the Garden was an intensity prep to get them ready for it. But then Patrick experienced it on the other side as a head coach of Boston University for 2 years in the America East. Again, like the Patriot, a one-bid conference. He took BU to the championship game his first year. They didn't win. They ended up going to the CBI because he wanted to get his team postseason experience. The second year as the head coach, they went to the championship game and they won it. They took the America East automatic bid, and then they ended up with Kansas in the opening round. And for 35 minutes, BU went toe-to-toe with Kansas. 35 minutes toe-to-toe. Last five, Kansas a little bit more depth. Morris Twins got their job done, kind of pulled away, won it. You know, that's Thomas Robinson, the Morris Twins, I mean, the whole thing. I mean, that's, and to go toe-to-toe with that group for 35 minutes, pretty impressive. But still, he talked about the pressure in a one-bid league when you get to this tournament. Everything you've done, you work hard, you work hard, you work hard, you're a number one seed. Okay. But you still have to have the well-timed three-game winning streak to get there. Well, Bucknell and Lafayette have each negotiated the first two. Bucknell beating Navy, then, of course, that game with Army on Saturday where they won 78-70. Now, tonight, this is it. An entire season and body of work comes down to what they do in tonight's game. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And that's why championship week, you see in championship week what it means. Valpo won last night. First time they've been since 2004 as a program. LIU is going to be the third straight year that they've been there. South Dakota State, second straight year they'll be there. See, that means, see, to me, a team like South Dakota State is a dangerous team to draw in the opening round to the NCAAs. They've been there, and they have a couple of players that are a year older now that are really good, including Nate Walters. So tonight's the Patriot at Soika in a one-bid league. Is it fair to be a one-bid league? No. It's not fair to be in a one-bid league, especially with how Bucknell is played this year. But it's, you know, you go from ideology to reality, and the reality is we know. But you know what? If any team is mentally prepared for this moment, it's Bucknell. Dave Paulson's done a great job of preparing this team with quality players. A Joe Willman, you can't put a price on. A Bryson Johnson, can't put a price on. Cameron Ayers, you can't put a price on. And you absolutely can't put a price on Mike Muscala. A no-ego quality guy who's an outstanding scorer inside, a really good free throw shooter, and a really good rebounder. And a very good last line of defense. Lafayette's a really good team. And that is tonight at Soika. Oh, this is such a fun time of the year. Now, I say that a lot. You hear me say so often, it's a fun time of the year. It's the college football season. It's a fun time of the year. It's the high school football season. It's a fun time of the year. It's the bowl season. It's a fun time of the year. It's high school wrestling and basketball playoffs. A fun time of the year. It's March for basketball. And then I'll say it again, obviously, when we get to baseball. And I'll say it again when we get to the U.S. Open. And I'll say it again when we get to Pocono. So there are a lot of things where we do say it's a fun time of the year. Well, this is. And tonight it's, again, right in our own backyard to see the quality of Bucknell Lafayette basketball on a national display this evening, which the kind of national display they deserve. All right, next half hour, it is going to be Greg Brown. We're going to switch gears from basketball to baseball and talk with Greg Brown, the play-by-play voice of the Pittsburgh Pirates, on how spring training is going. And again, spring training's longer this year. Because of the World Baseball Classic, there's an extra week to spring training. So managers have needed to, I think, handle it a little differently this time around. And Greg will talk about that and much more. Again, our thanks to Dave Paulson, our thanks to Ken Sherto, and, of course, in advance, our thanks to Greg Brown. We'll come back. Bottom of the hour news here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
I really need a used car.
Sunbury Motors has lots full of used cars.
But it has to be a good used car.
Well, they're not good.
What?
They're great. Sunbury Motors has over 300 used vehicles to choose from. Cars, SUVs, and trucks so good, we wouldn't sell them if we wouldn't drive them. That's probably why we consistently sell over 200 cars a month. And when it comes to new, Sunbury Motors is the largest Ford dealership in the central Susquehanna Valley. Sunbury Motors makes buying a new car easy with a huge inventory and lots of choices.
And I'm a smart shopper, and I know what the price should be for the car I want.
Well, here at Sunbury Motors, you get our lowest price promise. We research prices on used cars so much that if you find a better deal, we'll beat it. That's a promise. So here's your keys.
Thanks.
Take a test drive today at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and our Kia dealerships at Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Shop 24/7 and see our inventory at sunburymotors.com. That's sunburymotors.com. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back, News Radio 1070 WKOK. And this Wednesday, great to have you with us. Steve Jones with you on SJS. The Sunbury Motors Studios, where I comfortably reside. And yes, very comfortably, I might add. One of these days, we'll invite Kevin into the studio. One of these days. But we've talked wrestling today. We've talked a lot of basketball today. Doesn't hurt if we talk a little baseball. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. And the Hillshire's General Store hotline, always open at 1-800-795-9565. Powered by Hillshire's General Store. Go to www.hillshirestore.com. Last week we had on Steve Blass and talked with him. We also had on Tommy McCarthy last week from Clearwater talking about the Phillies camp. We're going to get Wheels on here pretty soon to talk about the Phillies heading into the season. But at the same time, the Pirates are rolling on, and a team that last year made a deep run in the National League race. They had gone past the All-Star break 2 years ago where they were in first place. Last year, even deeper, deep into August, and then the collapse happened the last week of August and then through September, and the Pirates ended up being out of it. But they are a young, talented team that has actually more depth this year than before. We talked about what the Phillies had depth-wise, Roy Halladay, Cole Hamels, Cliff Lee, Ryan Howard now apparently completely healthy and back, Chase Utley healthy back. Ben Rivera is a huge acquisition in center field to jumpstart that Phillies offense. When they get Carlos Ruiz back from the 25-game suspension, which I vehemently disagree with, it's going to make a huge difference in what Philadelphia does. And Jimmy Rollins needs to put together a Jimmy Rollins kind of season. Last year when guys were out, he did not put together a Jimmy Rollins kind of season that they needed to have. Did not have it. And they needed it for him last year. They needed Jimmy Rollins to step up that batting average another 20 points. They needed Jimmy Rollins to hit with some power to make up for the absence of Howard, to make up especially for the absence of Chase Utley last year. He did not. So they'll need him now as a vital part to really maybe step up the average another 5 to 10 points, maybe add like 4 or 5 more home runs. They need that from him. Rivera is going to give them a great presence that I like in center field. That was a really good acquisition they made from the Minnesota Twins. Difference maker. Now, can they fill the gaps in middle relief? Because the Phillies have a starting staff that for the most part is going to be able to get you to the seventh inning. Most managers like it if a starter can get you to the sixth. The Phillies have pitchers in 3 starters that can get you to the seventh, even though Roy Halladay got smacked around pretty good yesterday, giving up 7 runs. But I never panic about hearing a guy giving up 7 runs in spring training. He gives up 7 runs in each of his first 3 starts, then you panic. But you don't panic over, obviously, seeing somebody give up 7 runs in a spring training game, you know, in 2 2/3. Who cares? Did they get their work in, and how do they feel the day after? And he said that he feels much better now than he did a year ago. That makes a huge difference. Now, what about the Pirate Camp? Pirate Camp is moving on. I had a chance this morning to talk with Greg Brown, who joined us on the Hilscher's General Store hotline at 1-800-795-9565, powered by Hilscher's General Store, located 7 miles south of Sealands Grove on routes 11 and 15. Go to www.hilscherstore.com, and Greg Brown joining us on the Hilscher's General Store hotline. And Greg, down there in Bradenton, first of all, it's actually pretty sunny and nice here today. It's been great down there. What about this Pirates camp? What do you like about it so far, Greg?
Well, other than the fact the dislike of it being so long, of course, Steve, the fact that, you know, because of the World Baseball Classic, we're playing another week, a handful of extra games. And I guess the positive part of that is that maybe players that wouldn't have had an opportunity get a little extra chance because of the handful of players that are out there. You know, Chris LaRue and Jameson Taillon pitching for Canada, Jason Grilli for Italy, Wandy Rodriguez for the Dominican. So I guess that's the good part. And in terms of positives, I mean, Jose Tabata to me stood out from day one. The fact that he is in much better shape and determined to not only make the club, but I think try to wrestle that starting right field job away from Travis Snyder. I think that's a real positive. Neil Walker being healthy is positive. You know, a guy that I think has emerged who you know, folks saw pitch at State College as a rookie in 2009. He emerged, I think, on Monday as a story, is Phil Irwin, a pitcher out of the University of Mississippi. And this is something that has gotten no attention whatsoever down here or from what I've been able to read up there. You know, this guy came in relief the other day on Monday against the Orioles for Jeff Locke, who's trying to win a job as a fifth starter. Locke went 3 1/3. Irwin went 3 2/3. He pitched longer than the starter. He didn't walk a batter, and he struck out 7 Baltimore Orioles. And for this to happen, for a pitcher to go that deep, one pitcher, usually at halfway through spring training, that's where we are right now, usually the manager sends out a pitcher an inning to get some work in. Well, Clint Hurdle lets Irwin go the distance, 3 2/3. I think he has become the story, for me anyway. And last year was Matt Haig, who had a great camp. And by the way, Matt Haig was cut along with 6 other guys today. But to me, Phil Irwin becomes a feel-good story and a guy that maybe emerges as a dark horse to make the club.
Yeah, I know in doing State College games, he's one of the 5 guys over the last 5 years where I liked his makeup. There's, you know, and at this level, you're looking, you know, what kind of makeup does he have? Because you can't project if they're going to be a major league guy here, but you can project whether they have a chance to move through the organization. I thought he had that kind of makeup, and it looks like that kind of makeup has continued down there.
Well, and that's the way I feel too, Steve, because I don't know anything about mechanics. I don't know anything about pitching or hitting, but that's kind of what I go on too, is and I really root for guys like that because, and I could be wrong here, you would be able to correct me, I don't think Irwin is a guy that lights up the radar gun.
No.
You know, he's not going to hit 99 on the gun,
no.
But I certainly can tell a guy just by the statistics, his walks to strikeouts ratio is off the charts. You know, just looking at the numbers in his minor league career, 72 walks, 369 strikeouts, and that's almost eye popping. And I know that managers and pitching coaches love strike throwers. And you talk about makeup. To me, that indicates a guy, and the fact that he's doing the same thing in a major league camp, throwing strikes to big league hitters, indicates to me that there's no fear factor in Phil Irwin. I love guys that are fearless on the mound, and it looks as though Phil Irwin's the guy that says, "Hey, I'm going to throw my best stuff up there. It's going to be a strike, and I'm going to go one-on-one with you and see what happens."
The next part is teams take different approaches in spring training. There was a point last week where you guys were talking about Ryan Howard at that stage. It had 24 at-bats, yet Andrew McCutchen had only had 9. So, and there was some talk to take Howard and then near the end of camp, taper him down a little bit. What about the Pirate approach? What do they like to do in terms of at-bats early versus at-bats late?
Well, this year, no doubt, Hurdle's approach has been, because we're playing an extra almost week of games, he's had his starters play like once every 3 days for the first week and a half and get them two at-bats and get them out of there. Only in the last three or four games has he started to play, like McCutchen played back-to-back games for the first time last week, and he is extending them now to give them an extra at-bat. He's just slowly now getting them more at-bats and more games. And I mean, I don't know which approach works better. You give them heavy work early and then cool them off later in spring or vice versa. But I do believe that spring training is way too long for a position player to need that many at-bats. And the last thing in the world you want to do is wear down guys like McCutchen or any of the starters. And I think so I like Hurdle's approach. It's basically been ease them into it. And I think goes strong the last 2 weeks of spring training.
Yeah. Another guy that with some state college roots has, I believe, been battling Jeff Locke for that fifth start would be Kyle McPherson. Is it Locke's job to lose, or is that still a wide-open competition?
Well, of course, they won't say, Steve, what it is. My opinion has been, just a guess, is that it is Locke's job to lose and that McPherson has to wrestle it away from him.
Right.
The one thing that I think works against McPherson to a degree is that he has a history of working out of the bullpen as well. Locke does not. And so, therefore, I believe, and I think Neil Huntington suggested as much the other day when we talked to him, that if Locke does not make the rotation, he ends up in AAA Indianapolis as a starter. If McPherson does not make the starting rotation at the big league level, he has a chance to stay with the team as a long reliever or spot starter. And interestingly enough, from what happened on Monday with Phil Irwin, it almost appears to me that now Irwin and McPherson could be in a battle for maybe a long reliever out of the bullpen. Again, now they're not giving up on McPherson as a starter yet, but that's kind of how it looks to me. Like, well, they've been so impressed with Irwin that we'll see who gets, you know, more playing time on the mound, because as they whittled down, they cut seven guys today. As they whittled down this roster in the last 2 weeks of spring training, 2 weeks of games, there just aren't enough innings now for these pitchers, because the starters have to get built up. Today, James McDonald, they want to get like five innings out of him. Right. And so the more innings the starters go, there's less time for the relievers to get in there and get a chance to shine.
You and I both know, you know, from our respective jobs, that when you have a good product out there, the juices really flow. The last 2 years, the Pirates have put out a product that has gone deeper and deeper into the season. Certainly, this has been a time where, you know, I think people are waiting to see what happens. But are you getting a sense that position by position that the Pirates can go out on any day and they can compete with anybody, because this is a different feel in a different camp?
Well, it is. To me, Steve, it is. I mean, I look at this. In fact, I looked at it in the playoffs last year, actually. I looked at least a couple of teams that were in the postseason, American and National League, and objectively looked at them and said, you know, there's no way that team is that much better than the Pirates.
Right.
There were a couple clubs, and I won't know. I think maybe Baltimore was one, and a couple others. And I thought, wow, they made the postseason. There's no reason to think that the Pirates couldn't match up with them in postseason play. You look at the lineup, and you, of course, in spring training is when, you know, the slate is clean, and you start to create these scenarios that if this happens, if that happens, if the Pirates stay healthy, if guys have decent years, pitching staff does the job, then they certainly can sustain that good play through an entire season. And I do believe that. I think that their lineup is balanced enough now with Russell Martin in there. I saw a headline the other day that said Pirates going to try to play small ball, which is a bit deceiving, because if you look at Russell Martin, hit 21 home runs last year. Garrett Jones is a 29 home run guy last year. Neil Walker hit 16 in an abbreviated season. Alvarez, 30 home runs. He's easily a 40 home run guy in a good year. Right. McCutchen's a 30 home run guy. Marte is going to hit 20 home runs and a decent year. And right field, Snyder and Tabata, that combination, 25 to 30 home runs. And that's a very well-balanced lineup. And you put a decent rotation out there, which I think the Pirates have, I think that they can sustain the good play throughout an entire summer.
One final thing. You mentioned Russell Martin in there. This is a guy who had great success, all-star success with the Dodgers, certainly around a winner with the Yankees. Not just what he does at the plate, which I think the numbers speak for themselves, but his ability to handle pitchers and the confidence that he gives a staff. What can that mean?
Well, I look at it much like we saw what A.J. Burnett did for the pitching staff and for the club. I mean, he became a leader as a starter, which is rare. A starting pitcher becomes a team leader. But because he had been there before to postseason play and in pennant races and in the big stage of New York, I think people gravitated to him. And I think that they'll do the same with Russell Martin. You mentioned the two teams. I mean, two huge markets, the Dodgers in L.A., the Yankees in New York, people will just naturally, position players will gravitate to him. He's got that leadership ability. He's a vocal guy. He wears his emotions on his sleeve. He's one of those blue collar guys that I think Pirate fans will love. Is a decent runner for a catcher. Has some pop in the bat. And is just one of those. He's fiery. He's a fiery guy. He's vocal. And I think that that will mean a whole heck of a lot. I think it'll help Burnett carry some of the load. I think, you know, it's a help when you have two guys, one from a pitching standpoint and from a position player standpoint, both have been there in on the big stage and have been through playoff-type battles. And naturally, again, people are going to gravitate to them. But most especially, Steve, they gravitate to guys that are more than just vocal leaders or even quiet leaders. They gravitate to guys that have the resume, the baseball card numbers, the back of the baseball card.
Yeah.
And both Burnett and Martin have been to All-Star games as well as World Series. And I think for that reason, players will appreciate the type of leadership those two bring.
Greg, always an absolute pleasure and tremendous respect, as always, for the outstanding work that you do. Thank you so much for the time.
Likewise, Steve, and I'll be tuning in. Go Nittany Lions.
He'll be tuning in tomorrow, indeed, when Penn State takes on Michigan. And he told me, he says, Steve, I've been watching games. I've been checking. I said, I'm going to be watching. He said, look, we're going to watch the Big Ten tournament down here in Florida. The Big Ten tournament, I'll be honest about it, it is the second most competitive tournament and probably be the second most watched tournament this year in college basketball behind the NCAA tournament, because you have so many quality teams in this conference that will battle it out tomorrow, starting tomorrow, including Penn State, Michigan at 2:30 tomorrow, and 2:00 will be the airtime from the United Center in Chicago. Now, should Penn State win, it would then be Wisconsin, same time slot on Friday. So the story is, if Penn State wins, then we'll have basketball in this time slot each of the next 2 days. And if Michigan wins tomorrow, then we'll be back live with you from the Sunbury Motors studio on Friday, talking about what we witnessed out at the Big Ten tournament and also about the weekend and preview the seedings. Tonight at Soica, every ticket should be taken. I would hope every ticket is taken, because you're watching a chance to see something special. Tonight is, for those of you who say, you know, I've never been to an NCAA tournament before, I can't travel to an NCAA tournament game. Tonight at Soica is an NCAA tournament game. Right? The winner advances. This is Survive and Advance tonight. Tonight is not just the Patriot League championship game. Tonight is essentially an NCAA tournament game. The winner advances. They also advance with the title of being Patriot League champion. Lafayette certainly will have fans there tonight because there's a block of tickets that they have to have for this event. But it is, I know, spring break at Bucknell, but student attendance has mysteriously not been what it should be. I'm not sure if the students have understood this year the kind of team they're watching, how special they're watching, how special a Mike Muscala is, how special a Cameron Ayers is, a Joe Willman, a Bryson Johnson. The Frazier kid coming off the bench has done some marvelous things for Dave Paulson. And the great job that Dave Paulson has done, Hill's done a good job running the point, you know, checking his game in because he knows he has other four other people around him that just can carry the offensive load. And what a good defensive team this is. Lafayette's really good. Lafayette's had a great season, to their credit. Took care of Lehigh again. Split with Bucknell. Bucknell won at Soica. Lafayette was able to win at home. Okay. But now tonight, for those of you who said, well, you know what, you know, they play in the NCAA tournament. I can't really make a trip like that. If they have tickets available, I implore you to get tickets. Because actually tonight is not just the Patriot League Championship. Tonight is an NCAA tournament game. Tonight is the equivalent of playing in Dayton next Tuesday. You know, they talk about the first four. That's what really, this is like that. Last night in the end, last night, three teams got that feeling last night. Third straight year that LIU was in, LIU Brooklyn. Third straight year that won the Northeast Conference Championship. They beat Mount St. Mary's last night, really with a strong second half, 91-70. Third straight year they've been in as the NEC champion. Valpo. You know, we've seen all those great shots of the Drew shot and so forth. You know, that was a long time ago. Valpo has not been in the NCAA tournament since 2004. So talk about a fan base that values getting back at home last night on their home floor. They won 62-54, but they needed an 18-4 run to close the game out to win last night, 62-54. Second straight year that Nate Walters and South Dakota State are in. He had a great game with North Dakota State last night, finally won at 73-67. And what was the 208th meeting between the two schools? And it determined an NCAA bid. They won the Summit last night. Also last night, Rutgers beat DePaul to advance to the Big East Tournament, 76-57. And Seton Hall beat South Florida, which was in the tournament last year, 46-42. So tonight, Soica, be there. It's not just the Patriot League Championship. It's an NCAA tournament game in my mind. I'll talk to you tomorrow from Chicago, beginning at 2 o'clock, the Big Ten Tournament, Penn State and Michigan here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.